Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 I'm going to continue reading where I've been reading, where I left off, in Canto 3 Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 21. Entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Manu is referring to the first of the 14 Manus, Svayambhuva Manu, and the conversation is with Kardama Muni, who is going to become his son-in-law. Now, Kardama Muni is a brahmana, sage, and Svayambhuva Manu is a ministrator, a kshatriya. So the daughter of a kshatriya emperor is going to marry the brahmana son-in-law. But we haven't gotten there yet. Where I've completed up to reading is Kardama, a direct son of Lord Brahma, born from the body of Lord Brahma. There are 10 great sages. First 4 Kumaras, then Lord Shiva, then Svayambhuva Manu and his wife Shatarupa, then 10 great sages. And Kardama was actually number 11. Born from the shadow of Lord Brahma, and these sons were intended by Lord Brahma to assist him in the process of the secondary creation. The principal creation is what Vishnu did, secondary creation is what Brahma did. We're at the stage of the universal structure has been created, now it needs to be filled up. Or like the shell has to be populated. So the Prajapatis, Brahma and his praja, are to assist in creating good offspring. So the dialogue is between Vidura and Maitreya. Vidura is inquiring, Maitreya is answering, and Vidura has asked from the early part of this chapter about the process of creation, so Sarga and then now Visarga. All of what Lord Vishnu did has been described in detail, enough detail. You have to read it 10 times to understand what's being said. It's very, very complex, very deep. Then Lord Brahma is born, he does his tapa, he gets enlightened, he starts the process of creation. So Vidura is asking, what did Brahma do then? So he says, Maitreya says that Lord Brahma requested his sons to create offspring. So Kardama was one. So Kardama, this is Satya Yuga. It's at the very beginning of creation, the first Satya Yuga in the so many Yuga cycles. So he goes to the forest for performing austerities in order to be qualified to produce good praja, which is a good lesson. And 1/10 of his life, which comes to 10,000 years, is what he had dedicated for that purpose. He became perfect. Perfection meaning he saw the personality of Godhead face to face. Lord Vishnu was very pleased with him. And he personally came, descended from the spiritual world, and didn't come standing. He was on the back of Garuda, Garuda's flapping his wings very nicely. Lord Vishnu is standing on his shoulders with his forearms, smiling and just enjoying the scene where Kartava Muni was situated. Kartava Muni was overwhelmed with ecstasy and paid his obeisances before Lord Vishnu, because he was not only perfect in the process of meditation, he was a perfect devotee. So then he offered prayers, and we're discussing his prayers. And many nice things he said. At first, appreciation of the Lord, then appreciation of the process of approaching the Lord, and then acknowledging that those persons who approach the Lord for material things, they're very foolish, but still the Lord is kind upon them. And then he counts himself amongst the foolish, saying, I've approached you for material desire. My material desire is I'd like to have a wife of like disposition. So I've approached you for that. But you know my heart anyway. So you know even before I disclose to you. And then he describes a process by which one can go beyond one's material desire. So sakam bhakti and nishkam bhakti, in other words. And he describes that those that follow the system of prescribed duties in order to fulfill material desire, they come in contact with you. Those who directly hear the glories of the personality of God, they directly come in contact with you and directly become purified. He then describes time, because you have to have time to have anything happen, at least any material thing happen. So he compares time to a wheel. It's a very interesting verse. A wheel, this is the last couple of verses that I read from. A wheel that has a hub, and the hub is timelessness, or impersonal Brahman. And then there's three nabhis. Nabhi means navels. So there are three nodes or navels, past, present, and future. There's 13 spokes, meaning 13 seasons. Excuse me, 13 months. 13 months, because we have 12 months, but then in the lunar calendar, there's 13. Every 3 years, you add an extra month, and then it's 12 months, and then it's 12 months, and then it's 13 months, and 12 months. So it's calculated in a different manner. 360 different joints, that's the days of the year. 6 rims, that's the seasons. Numberless leaves, that's like the smaller units of time. And by the revolution of this wheel of yours, you cut short the duration of life, the lifespan of those who pursue material pleasure. And but that same wheel doesn't touch the lifespan of your devotees. So, text 19. My dear Lord, you alone create the universes, O Personality of Godhead. Desiring to create these universes, you create them, maintain them, and again, wind them up by your own energies, which are under the control of your second energy called Yoga Maya. Just as a spider creates a cobweb by its own energy and winds it up again. So, metaphor. Something that we know to understand something we don't know. So, how does a spider make its spider web? You ever watch them do it? This little fluid comes out of their mouth. And then they, you know, and round and around 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 and around. And then they crawl around their spider web. And I've never seen them withdraw their web, but, you know, apparently they can just take the web and it goes back in their body. So, as with the spider making his spider web, you also create from your own energy this material creation. And then sometimes you enter into this material creation and sometimes you depart from it and then sometimes you withdraw the material creation. Earlier, a similar message was presented. I can't remember which verse, but this is very similar to one of the Chatur Shloki verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. What that means is there are four essential verses found in Canto 2, Chapter 9, which summarize the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Or you could say it the other way. The other verses come like strands from this very compact four verses. Something like a ball of cotton. You ever make ghee wicks? You just take a ball of cotton and a little piece of it and you twist it and twist it and twist it. Put some little ghee and twist it and twist it, little ghee and twist it and twist it. Now you have a ghee wick. But supposing you did it the other way around. You took the ghee wick and you started stretching it and stretching and stretching and stretching and you got a ball of cotton. So the ghee wick is like the Chatur Shloki verses and the rest of the Bhagavatam is the expansion of those four verses. And then you can tighten it and tighten and you get the Chatur Shloki verses. So, the first of the Chatur Shloki verses says, it begins, the Sanskrit is, Aham evasam evagre. In the beginning, I alone exist. And then the second line says, during the period of cosmic manifestation, I alone exist. And after cosmic annihilation, guess what? I alone exist. So, which means, like the web of the spider comes from the body of the spider, it's nothing but a product of the body of the spider web. And this material creation, similarly, is but a product of the transformation of Krishna's energies. The phrase that's used by Vyasadeva, or that phrase which is describing the writing of Vyasadeva, is Shakti Parinama Vad. Parinama means transformation. The doctrine that's presented, or teaching that's presented by Vyasadeva is everything that exists is but a transformation of the energies of God. The whole process of creation, if you study it, it's here in the third canto, and then it's also in the second canto, and it's described again in the 11th canto, and other parts also. It's something like, well, I think of it like an accordion. You know what an accordion is? A musical instrument. It has like a harmonium kind of, but it's bigger. It has a keyboard, but it has bellows. And you open it up, and then you close it. Open it up. And you close it, and that's the bellows that puts air through the reeds, and you press the keys, and certain keys then are vibrated to make the sound. At least that's the basic principle of how an accordion works. So there are times when the material energy, there's energy of Krishna, it's eternal, never created or destroyed, just like Einstein said. And sometimes it's in this very packed up state, like the accordion that's closed, and then there's times when it opens up, and then the times that it closes. Maybe another image is like a flower or a lotus. At night it closes, the sun comes and, it's, and then it opens up. Maybe you've seen pictures of time-lapse photography with a little bud of a flower, and it starts to boop, and then boop, and then it opens up. And so the material creation is like that. All the energies are within Krishna, and as he exactly as being said here by Kardama Muni, by your desire, your energies then are extended. The unmanifest becomes manifest. And there's details and details and details and details of how that happens. Lots of detail. I mean, even more detail than you might want to read about. Lots of detail. But within the subtler forms of energies, the grosser forms of energy are there, subtly. And then they unfold one into the next, into the next, into the next, into the next. Which means that, like, let's say, the most gross of the forms of energy is earth. Which means that within earth, the other energies are also to be found. So, like, within the earth, there's some water, there's some air, there's some fire, and there's some ether. Proof of that is, according to the Vedic conception, sound is carried in ether. The whole of, cell phone technology and, you know, television and radio and all that stuff is depending upon, you send a signal through space. It hits a satellite, bounces back, or whatever, however they do it, receives it, sends it back, and then, you know, hello. But it's, you know, it's through the element of ether. Sound travels through ether. Yes? But sound also travels through earth. You know, someone's banging on the wall. And you can hear it. Because there's ether within, you know, the sheetrock. Although mostly earth, there's some other elements. And so forth. So, Krishna opens and closes. That's what he's saying. And he does it by his own will that it happens. Or otherwise it doesn't happen. So when he wills, it's withdrawn. And when he wills that it's in a resting state, it's in a resting state. And when he wills that it's unfolded, it unfolds. And there isn't anyone else that Krishna is depending upon to do that. And there isn't anyone else that can do that. But Krishna, or the direct expansions, the plenary expansions of Krishna, Mahavishnu. But they're just simply expansions of Krishna. Those Krishna is doing, one can say. Or Mahavishnu is doing, one can also say. Bringing about creation. Purport. In this verse, two important words, nullifying the impersonal theory, nullify the impersonal theory that everything is God. Here Kardama Muni says, O personality of Godhead, you are alone, but you have various energies. So there's energy, but there's also energetic. That's not what impersonalists say. You can't have two things. You can't have energy and energetic. That's two things. You can only have one thing. And since you can't have two things, you can only have one thing, then Brahman is without energy. And Brahman is without a person. That's their idea. But the Bhagavatam is saying, no. There's just like the spider and the saliva that comes from the spider. The saliva isn't the spider, but the saliva doesn't exist separately from the spider. They're inseparable. But they're two entities. So there's the energetic and then there's the energy. When the cob was manufactured by the saliva of the spider does not become impersonal. Similarly, the creation and manifestation of the material or spiritual energy does not render the Creator impersonal. Here, the very prayer suggests that God is sentient and can hear the prayers and fulfill the desires of the devotee. Therefore, he is Satchitananda Vigraha, the form of bliss, knowledge, and eternity. This is a very simple point. You may find it useful sometime. Let's say, especially looking around the room, you're all from Indian background. So most of the people that lived here before you came here, they didn't come from an Indian background, they came from a European background, mostly. Now it's becoming, you know, all kinds of things. So many Chinese people coming to America. So, but anyway, before the Red Indians, Prabhupada would call them, or after them came the Europeans. So many of the Europeans, most of the Europeans, are of Christian background. Protestant initially, and then the Catholics also. So largely America had that foundation, Christian, and then some degree Jewish faith. So when you, I've had this experience. So what you say, I know that many of you like to do book distribution, especially you like Vaisheshika's association. And because he likes book distribution, you like book distribution. So when you go to the public and you meet people and you show them Bhagavad Gita, and you know, depending upon the person, but some persons, when you show them you know, a picture, this is Krishna and Arjuna, and they say, who's that? And you say, that's God. And they say, he can't look like that. And you say, well, he can't look like that. Well, he can't look like that. That's why he can't look like that. And so here's something you can try. Let me ask you a question. Sure. When you pray, does God hear your prayer? Of course he hears my prayer. Why do you ask that question? Well, with what instrument does he use to hear your prayer? Does he have ears to hear your prayer? Or something, it may not look like yours, but you know, does he have ears? Does he have the capacity to hear? Yes. Is God loving? Yes. Of course God is loving. So that means, you know, you're a person and he loves you, so he's a person, right? And if you're good instead of bad, then you're going to go to a good place, right? You're going to go to the kingdom of God. So that means he has a place. And what happens in his place? There's people enjoying activities with him, right? I mean, just take them through the logical sequence of their you know, things that you know that they accept. So that means God's a person, right? So if God's a person, let me ask you the next question. Does he have a form or doesn't have a form? Is he a person without a form? Or he's a person with a form? Well, I never thought about it. I guess he's got to be a person with form. So we're on the same page. The scripture that you study teaches you about God that's a person, a loving person, and just doesn't specify, but he has a spiritual form. And this scripture describes God that is a person, and he's loving, and he has a spiritual form, and it describes his form. No, he can't look like that. Or sometimes they'll say, well, that's very interesting. Let me take a look at that. The Bhagavatam is not only, well, it's providing us with all this information of earlier in this canto, there is a chapter called Description of the Kingdom of God. So that's something you can share with people you distribute books to. Not only it tells you that that God is a person, but it describes his kingdom. You know, what does he do there? what does it look like? What are the avenues like, and the parks like, and the palace in which God resides? What's it like? What are the opulences there? What do people do? There's this wonderful description in Srimad Bhagavatam, description of the kingdom of God. And it's the entrance into the kingdom of God is by four great sages who became so qualified they received God's mercy. He invited them to the kingdom of God. So take a look, read the book. He gives you that information. Here's Kardama seeing the personality of Godhead, and he's understanding now the relationship between him and creation. Because Kardama, like us also, we have some part to play. Now we're not, you know, God realized in 10,000 years do meditation and see the personality of God. It's not likely, too likely to happen in our case. But we also have some part to play, some service to do in the affairs of fulfilling the desire of the personality of Godhead. Because Kardama is doing what Brahma asked him to do. And Brahma is doing what the Supreme Lord asked him to do. And the Supreme Lord is doing what he wants to do. And within the creation, we're here, and there's something he wants us to do. And just like with Kardama, the Supreme Lord is giving him the capacity. He's qualifying himself through austerity and purification process. But it's to do a particular service. In Kardama's case, it's to help Brahma, who has the service of creating universe, to populate the universe with good offspring. So that may not be our service, and maybe, who knows? At some point in the evolutionary cycle of repeated birth and death, maybe we'll be a Prajapati sometime. But at least we're part of the population, and we have some service to do, according to the codes of the Vedas, and under the guidance of a qualified guide or teacher. So he goes on, Kardamuni to Lord Vishnu, "My dear Lord, although it is not your desire, you manifest this gross and subtle elements, this creation of gross and subtle elements, just for our sensual satisfaction. Let your causeless mercy be upon us, for you have appeared before us in your eternal form, adorned with a splendid wreath of tulsi leaves." Now going back into earlier chapters, there's a very different presentation that's made as to why creation takes place. Sometimes you'll be asked that question. So listen carefully so you'll be able to supply the answer to that question. Now people ask the question sometimes in a different way. The way that people commonly ask the question is in a doubting manner. So God is supposed to be all good, and God is all powerful. So he can do whatever he likes because he's all powerful and he's all good. So question, why did he create a place where people suffer? You heard it. Maybe you've even asked the question yourself. Do it again. God is all good. God is all powerful. He can do whatever he likes. So why did he create a place like this where people suffer? And there's lots of suffering and unnecessary suffering. So why did he do it? So the inference is either he made a mistake, or there must be, there's no God that's all powerful and all good. Or maybe he's just like mean, wrathful, vengeful God. Because people sinned, he just really let him have it. He clobbered him, created this bitter place. So here's the picture that's portrayed by Maitreya to Vidura, when Vidura asks please describe the process of creation. I'll do it briefly. It's far more expanded. Maitreya's conversation takes Vidura to the time of cosmic annihilation. Cosmic annihilation means Vedic picture of time is cyclical. So for the equal period of time that there's creation, the equal period of time there's resting. And then again, creation, maintenance, dissolution, equal period of time of resting. For like, you know, day and night. Like that. Or the seasons, they say. Time in Vedic picture always moves in a cyclical fashion. So he takes my Vidura to the condition where it's the unmanifest state, the energies, the cobweb has been brought back into the body of the spider. And he says, so Mahavishnu is reclining on Ananta Shesh in the causal ocean, and he's enjoying his eternal pastimes with his internal energy, Rama. But he doesn't need anything. He's as happy as one can be happy. Then he has the following thought. The living entities that are in their dormant state of consciousness right now, susupti state, they have a natural capacity to be in a loving relationship with me. But now they're in this dormant state, and that's so because they misuse their free will. So I have a will that they could give up that rebellious spirit and come and enjoy with me in loving pastimes, loving exchanges. That's one desire. Then a second desire is, along with Rama Devi, there's the reflection of Rama Devi, known as Chaya Devi, known by other names also. Along with Yogamaya, there's the external manifestation of Yogamaya, Mahamaya. And she's in a dormant state, as living entities are in a dormant state. So he has another thought or will, and that is, I know that she wants to do something in relation to me, so I'll give her something to do. And he does that just by glancing. So his glance is very powerful. There's many descriptions of the glance of Ram and the glance of Krishna. This is the glance of Mahavishnu. Just by Mahavishnu's glance, the whole creation starts. The dormant material energy becomes activated by his powerful glance, because within the glance, there's all the living entities that were within his body, and they're spiritual. And so when spirit comes in contact with matter, then matter becomes activated. And there's also the time energy, which is the transformation of Rama. She understands the Lord's desire, so she makes all arrangements. So she has many potencies at her disposal, and one of them is the time energy. She sends forth the time energy along with the glance of Mahavishnu. And when time energy and the living entities contact matter, it's like an object that becomes electrified. An object that's just lying there, not plugged into an electric socket with a switch turned on, it's just sitting there. Like, you know, an electric stove. Just sitting there. A heater or a cooler, just sitting there, but turn on the electricity. So the electricity, the powerhouse is Mahavishnu. And the electricity is Rama, his internal potency. And the copper wire that conducts from the powerhouse to the device is the glance. And then the electrified object is material nature, Pradhan. So Pradhan starts doing something according to the plan of the Lord. And he has other energies and Brahma to assist him, and other person to assist Brahma, to assist Lord Vishnu. So Kardamoni is one of those who's assisting Brahma to assist Lord Vishnu. And he's understanding that it's actually you. But your kindness is, in addition to making an arrangement for us to come back to you in a loving disposition, there's also this potential opportunity for us to try to fulfill our desires. Our desires separate from you. Our sense gratificatory desires. That's what he's saying here. You don't want us to indulge our senses in sense gratificatory desires. But the arrangement that you make permits us to do that. In part, you're kind upon us, but in part, you're giving us the regulations. Listen carefully. The regulations of the codes of the Vedas are to help lift us out of the tendency of sense gratification. Prabhupada gives this example. When the government regulates alcohol or cigarettes, you have to be so many years old before you can even buy the stuff. And you have to have a license to sell the stuff. And they take taxes. And they're regulating. The real message is you should do without it. But you can't do without it, so there's regulation. And you drink too much and you drive a car, you're in jail. If you're not dead. Because it's harmful for you. You shouldn't do those things. So similarly, Prabhupada reasons that the regulations of the codes of the Vedas are telling us actually you should do without these things. But you can't, if you're not able to do without these things, then follow the regulations and gradually it'll help bring you to goodness. And in that condition of goodness, you can begin to consider and contemplate transcendence. And as you contemplate transcendence, you can do without the sense gratification. So that's the high road. And then there's the low road, the slow road. So along with creation, just like the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, along with creation, Krishna tells Arjuna, I send forth generations of men and demigods, and with them, this process of sacrifice, and bless them. Through sacrifice, you can become elevated. Through sacrifice, you can become detached from the worldly activities of life and contact the transcendental realm of life through sacrifice. But Kardama is a very humble person. He's speaking of the Lord's purpose of creation to provide fallen persons like him, sensually weak persons like him. I mean, that's a laugh. He just for 10,000 years has been doing meditation. What kind of sensually weak person is he? And then after seeing the Supreme Lord, and after receiving the wife that he asked the Supreme Lord for another several thousands of years, he continues doing meditation and tapasya. He's not a sensually weak person. He's characterizing himself in a humble way like that, but that's not his position. And in the purport, Prabhupada is saying that the creation of the Lord is done by his external energy. It's very clear. It's explicit. His internal potency recognizes the Lord's desire. She has an aspect of her that for fulfilling this particular purpose of the Lord, she expands herself into the external energy. While she continues the internal energy engaging in loving pastimes with the Lord. And as he's not diminished by his expansions, she's not diminished by her expansions either. That's spiritual. Here's something material. That's Prabhupada's example. You have a piece of paper. Take the piece of paper, rip it into little pieces. Now you have all little pieces in your hand. And you throw the little pieces into the middle of the room. Now the pieces are all spread out throughout the room, and you no longer have the original paper. It's all spread throughout the room in little pieces. That's something material. Now here's something spiritual. Krishna expands himself into another form, and the original feature of Krishna is not reduced. And similarly, the potency, the internal potency of Krishna, expands herself, and she's not reduced. That's pretty neat math. 1 minus 1 equals 1. Om Purnamadat Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachyate. So Kardva Muni is teaching us through his prayers to the Lord how creation takes place, how we to understand this world in which we live. It's nothing other than his own energy, his external energy, the expansion of the internal potency as the external potency. And it's his causeless mercy that he's making these two arrangements for the fulfillment of our desire and to correct that tendency to try to enjoy independently from him by various methods. But the principal essence of it is sacrifice, recognizing the Supreme and offering whatever we have to the Supreme. Because this material world is full of danger at every step, it is not meant for the devotees, but for the living entities who want to lord it over the material energy at their own risk. Like the buyer beware notice on certain products, like cigarettes. Buyer beware. The Surgeon General cautions, this will kill you. It'll do all kind. It'll destroy your health, and so many bad things. Buyer beware. I'll take 3 packs, please. So material energy has its buyer beware notice. At our own risk. Krishna is so kind that he allows the sense enjoying living entities a separate world created by him to enjoy as they like. Yet. At the same time, he appears in his personal form. The Lord unwillingly creates the material world, but he descends in his own personal form, or sends one of his reliable sons, or a servant, or a reliable author like Vyasadeva to give instruction. He himself instructs in his speeches of Bhagavad Gita. This propaganda work goes on side by side with the creation to convince the misguided living entities who are rotting in this material world to come back to him and surrender unto him. Therefore, the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita is this, quote, give up all your manufactured engagements in this material world and just surrender unto me. I shall protect you from all sinful reactions. I'll just end with this. I've been reading this slowly and carefully and discussing it, and I find it very practical in two ways. One is, they're both practical for us, especially, how to go. We also have a mix. As Kardama is characterizing himself, we also have a mix of spiritual and material attraction. No, without exception. There's a mix of both. Spiritual attraction, material attraction. It's called Sakam Bhakti. Like Dhruva. He wanted Lord Vishnu for a very specific purpose. He wanted a kingdom. Here Kardama Muni is characterizing himself. I worship Lord Vishnu. Why? I want a wife of similar disposition as me so I can fulfill my desires. It's an instruction of Brahma, but it's my desire. I want a qualified wife. But he also has great devotion. So how do you go from mixed to unmixed devotion? That's one very, it's woven, you read it carefully, the instruction is there. In the form of this story or narration. It's really, really practical. Highly recommend reading this section carefully. And another is household life. There's a few householders here. And instructions in how one should live in household life. Here it's before he's married. And then later he's introduced to his potential wife. and how he considers being married to that very qualified wife, and how he lives in his household ashram. I mean, step by step, it's really practical, like how to carry out your duties as a householder. And then there's this discussion by Kapila Dev about the role of submitting oneself to the codes of the Vedas so that these desires can be filled in a proper way, in a regulated way. And then he describes how to direct, as I mentioned this already, but how to directly overcome material desire. That doesn't mean I give up household life. It may mean that. But more, it means engage in my duties without attachment for the sense gratificatory aspect of those duties, and instead devote myself fully to the personality of Godhead in the execution of my worldly duties. Very practical. Very practical. It's a different yuga. So it's like the form is quite different. But the principles are the same. The principles are forever. They're eternal. We're not going to live our life like Kartava lived his life. But the principles apply. Very instructive. I say it again. I highly recommend. Read this section very carefully, like, you know, several times. And even better, discuss it with others, like we're doing right now. And try to receive the message how to go from sakkam bhakti to nishkam bhakti, and how to carry out your duties in household life, how to regard the desires, how to regard the regulations of those desires, how to regard the Supreme Lord, how to gradually progress, going back to Godhead while executing duties in household ashram. Very practical. Very practical. So any discussion? Yes?
The sunset is like, I'm trying to understand that when I get around the state of consciousness, right? So I think is that, because, you know how we get for non, we develop an attachment towards your deities, right? Like, whatever relations you have in the life. Then we have our family around, you know? And even if every member or every friend or every person around us also has a part of God.
Has a what?
Part of the soul of the Lord, right?
Every soul is part of Krishna, that's what you're saying? Okay.
So that's why, that is, I think, really the meditative attachment. Like, you are caring.
I don't get it. Do you get it?
So having a detachment versus, you know, how do you do?
I'm going to get a translator up here. Go ahead, Mahamantra.
So, like, how the way we are getting attached to deities when serving?
How we get attached to serving the deity.
Right,
to God.
And similarly, God is in every relative and friend of me.
Okay, God is within the heart of every living entity, whether friend, relative, or people we don't know.
So, is it the reason, is it due to the presence of the Lord, I am attracted to my family members?
Oh. Well, let me ask you: are you equally attracted to all living entities as you are attracted to your family members?
No.
No. Okay. I mean, that's an honest answer to an honest question. So then the answer would be no, because he's also there. I can't hear. Follow.
Then why are different people attracted to different deities?
Different deities. Well, the question doesn't have anything to do with the other parts. I'm a little confused. The worship, here's what Krishna says about attraction for forms of the Lord. That's a separate question. Attraction for the forms of the Lord have to do with the modes of nature. You know what the modes of nature are? Yes. Good dispassion, ignorance, modes of nature, correct? Okay. So according to the modes of nature that are moving someone, they may be inclined to a particular expression of worship. So according to that mode of nature filtering through or inspiring a particular type of worship, then some like this form, some like that form, some like another form. Why are there different religions in this world? Why are there different forms or ways of expressing one's faith in God? Because of the modes of nature. It's a very different question than your first question. I don't see. What's the connection between the attraction that you have for your family and family members and friends, and feeling some attraction for a particular deity form of the Lord, and then other deity forms of the Lord? I don't see the connection. Do you? Well, attachment and detachment, both. Attachment to the Supreme and detachment from the temporal or illusory.
Right. But it's like so difficult to okay, right?
That's the third point. But it's possible. Do you believe that it's possible? And besides it's difficult, is it possible? Krishna wouldn't speak about it if it's impossible. So it's possible. Krishna wouldn't speak about it. Okay. By practicing, by abhyasa yoga yuktena cetasa nanyagamino, by practicing, investing consciousness in the eternal, and practicing withdrawing consciousness from the temporary. That's how. By yoga. Yoga means linking with the Supreme. When you link yourself with the Supreme, it's like turning the light on. And when the light is on, what happens to the darkness? Light is stronger. Darkness is dispelled. So the attraction for the temporary is dispelled by attraction for the eternal. When the light's on, the darkness is dispelled. This attraction for the temporary is due to the absence of attachment for the eternal. So practice yoga, which is bring one's consciousness in contact with sat, that which is eternal. Nasate vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sataha. Very simple. The tattvadarshis, Krishna says, second chapter, very simple. The tattvadarshis don't place much value in the asat, they place value in sat. That's yoga. They connect with that which is eternal. So the process of bhakti yoga is connecting with the eternal through loving service. Because what is it that every living entity does? We serve constitutionally. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, what your culture is, what your language is, what your age is, what your color is, what your IQ is, just it doesn't matter. What species, we're serving. Souls are serving because we're constitutionally servants. So direct that service propensity toward the Supreme in a kind and favorable and loving manner. Turn the light on. And then the other darkness disappears. Gradually. It's gradually because we're attached. We're attached to darkness. Yeah, at least like some of it we're attached to. Some of it we don't like, so we can give that part up easily. But there's some part of it we're attached to. So it's gradual because of our attachments. But the how to, I just described. Follow the regulations of bhakti. They help you direct your attention towards the light, towards the Supreme Person, in a loving way. It's very pleasing, very soothing, very happy, very sublime. And by so doing, detachment will come. I'll give you a very practical example of this. How did Prabhupada... You've read the Lilamrita about Prabhupada's life? The story of Prabhupada's life? Well, he came to America on the order of his spiritual master, and he started in Manhattan. He didn't even have a place to stay, didn't even have any money, just like somebody put him up in an office. Dr. Mishra had a studio office. No water, no toilet, no shower. He'd stay in his office. So he had to go to Dr. Mishra's home once in the morning, take his bath. Anyway, so he started with nothing, but gradually he found some people that heard. He didn't start with rules and regulations. He just turned the light on. He didn't say detachment. He didn't say detachment. He said, "Here, let's have kirtan. Glass of prasadam." He personally cooked for everybody. Sadhu, cooking for all these like young people. And every now and then they figured out they should try to help him clean up afterwards. And then some teachings. So kirtan, some teachings, and prasadam. Kirtan, teachings, Krishna, Krishna, and Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, and Krishna. And after some time, they said, "Shouldn't we be detached from some things? Shouldn't we follow some regulations, Swamiji?" He said, "Yes. I'll give them to you later." So that's how it starts. Very good, very practical lesson. So when we introduce people, we don't say this restriction, that regulation, this detachment. That's not where we start. Take the holy name. Please take this book. Come and attend some gathering group. Discuss topics of Krishna. Take nice Krishna prasadam. Dance. It's joyful. And then as they become a little purified, then, you know, they understand there's some things that are not good for me to continue doing. You follow. The detachment follows attachment to Krishna, is the point. The cart follows the horse. Hitch up your horse. That's how. Put devotion to Krishna out front. And the rest follows. Okay? Yes?
What is it?
Speak loud enough so they can hear you in the back.
I understand that we need to develop the consciousness to please Krishna in every activity that we do. But it starts with one activity. So I wanted to understand, how do we go from a duty, like understanding that I'm a servant of Krishna, that's why I need to do this. I want to please Krishna, and that's why I need to do it, from that point to the point of having the real motivation behind it to actually please Krishna.
How do you go from duty to love? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Purification. Because the quality of love is there, but we're not feeling it. We're feeling something else. We're feeling attraction for something else. So, voluntarily, we accept regulation so we can free ourselves from that tendency and awaken the other tendency. And as the other tendency awakens, it comes out. It's just duty, from duty properly performed comes purification. And from that purification awareness or higher consciousness, and that higher consciousness gradually, the feelings of devotion, that's our nature, and that's what we start to do, spontaneously becoming attracted. So same thing differently from nectar devotion. By following Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti comes Raga Nuga Sadhana Bhakti, comes Bhava Bhakti, comes Prema Bhakti. Okay? Naturally it comes.
So while performing, you mentioned while performing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti or while doing the regular duties properly, so we can get to the next stage?
Yes. You know the example given in the scripture, the Ayurvedic cure for jaundice. Misri, rock candy. I've had the experience where I had malaria and I ate rock candy and it tastes bitter. Now rock candy isn't bitter, but it tastes bitter. So the regulations of bhakti may seem like us similarly to be very bitter, but actually they're very sweet. So as the disease of jaundice is cured, one of the symptoms is the rock candy starts to taste sweet. Similarly, by following the regulations of sadhana bhakti, the regulations are sweet. I look forward to rising early in the morning and taking bath and going to the temple and sitting before the deity and chanting. And I really look forward to reading more verses of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. It's not like, you know, a duty. It's beyond that stage. It's relish, because it's actually sweet. And in doing something for other devotees, going out of my way, it's joyful. It flows when the diseased condition is reduced. Okay. One more.
So that means I don't need to force myself, I'm doing this to please Krishna, I'm doing this to please Krishna, not like that.
You can train the mind, that's okay. But that's not going to make the mind think, I want to please Krishna. It can help guide the mind, but it can't create that spontaneous attraction. It can help in the regulative stage to keep the mind from the gutter, to keep it in the middle of the road. My purpose while I'm doing these regulations is to come to the stage, so I'm trying to please Krishna. I'm attracted to trying to please, come to that stage of pleasing Krishna. So I can remind myself, but that's not the essence of what's going to get me there. It just keeps me, you know, chaste to the process and not straying from the process. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Maharaj. When I do services in the temple and at home, I'm not feeling the connection that I'm doing this because of the instructions of Maharaj. The connection is missing, like the way I'm doing services, say, book distribution and at home, taking care of Lord babies. Feeling that detachment, that these services are committed to the instructions and how to overcome this.
Well, it's a little bit like this other question. How do you move from duty to love? You know, one answer that's already been given is just continue out of duty. But also, like Sampath was saying, you can remind yourself the real purpose is a loving, it's a gesture of loving dealing. One of the ways that I was trained as a new devotee was from the very first thing in the day, why am I doing this? When the alarm goes off in the morning, why do I get up? Now I'm going to go take my bath. Why am I taking my bath? Why am I putting my dhoti on? Why am I putting my dhoti on? Why am I applying the tilak? Why am I putting... You know, the answer to each one is, this is the guidance that our founder Acharya has given us, how to live our lives. Now I'm going down to the temple room. Why? Now I'm paying my obeisances before the Vyasa-san. Why? Each thing. The purpose is purification, but there's a person behind the purpose. Because otherwise we wouldn't know how to do anything. In those little list of things that you just mentioned, how did you know to do those things? Someone taught you. And, of course, you said yes instead of no, so that's your credit, but there's also, you wouldn't even know to say yes without someone. So there's instruments, this person, that person, the other person, they're instruments of our founder Acharya. So part of the training that you should be receiving and, you know, reminding yourself is you and all of us were connected to our founder Acharya through the disciplic succession. I'm receiving these things that are, it's not abstract or disconnected. So if there's this sense of disconnectedness, that's my impersonalism. So what's the antidote to that impersonalism? At least let me accept it because I have some faith that will purify me. But then faith in the teaching also comes from faith in the teacher. Otherwise, why this teaching instead of some other teaching? Because of the teacher. That's personalism. So, ultimately, it's the relationship with Krishna. But more immediately, it's the relationship with those that are guiding me in my spiritual life. And because I have confidence and trust in them, I'm following. And I'm finding it's purifying. I'm finding happy. I'm finding a whole outlook on life that wasn't the same before. So then that's a matter of learning something that moves your heart, called gratitude. And feeling grateful for that which is just transforming my life. And that gratitude is the seed of love. Otherwise, it's very mechanical. It's like a child getting something from their parent, and they don't even have a sense of anything. Just, you know, take. So go back. Now, all the things that you've received, there's from someone. The sense of what this is going to do for my life, I know theoretically and I also know subjectively. I'm feeling something. My life is changing. The quality of my life is changing. The process is powerful. It's very effective. It's been given to me by someone very, very kindly. Sense of gratitude. Let me apply it nicely, because then I can fulfill the real purpose for which the person has given me this nice thing. That's love. The other is mechanical or selfish. Okay? You're all right with that answer? You want more? You're okay. Okay, we'll end, I think. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.